Good morning. Welcome to Ninercast. I'm Grant Cohn. That's Tom Jensen, who's at Ninercast on Twitter. Make sure you follow him. The title of today's show is The Niners' Toughest Draft Decisions. Tom is a draft guru, and he has visual aids for today's show. So we're going to get into it later, though. We're going to make you wait. First, we're going to talk football theory, because that always gets the people going. That's what I like.
Yeah, and this what has we to both do like, right?
Yeah, this has to do big time with Brandon Ayuk and maybe in the future Brock Purdy as well.
Yeah.
Should the Niners give Brandon Ayuk what he's worth? It's sort of like a yes and no answer. Explain it, Tom.
Well, there's a couple of things that they need to look at why they would want to keep Ayuk.
Right.
And then commit to that.
Yeah.
You're saying, okay, you want him to be the focal point of your offense. Fine. You want Brock Purdy to be your quarterback for the franchise going forward, then commit to that by investing in the offensive line, re-signing Ayuk, and doing what you can to keep developing Purdy. That would be the aligned strategy. But what the Niners tend to do is just be committed to process. And so the process would be, well, we're going to string out our contract talks with Ayuk. Mm-hmm. We're going to eventually sign him. We're not going to commit that much to the offensive line. We'll just have people compete for jobs and we'll go forward.
It's we'll do what aimless. We do.
It's aimless.
We'll do what we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's generated so many Super Bowl titles.
Exactly.
Seriously.
Yeah. Well, it generates appearances, and that's what Jed York wants.
Yeah.
Is constant contention. And that's the formula for money.
I agree. And that's why, like, when I have these debates with people on YouTube or on Twitter, and people are adamant that you have to pay Ayuk, you have to pay Purdy. Sure. But why are you investing so much money in your passing game when you aren't a passing team? Like, you pass less than every other team in the league. And when you do and make those kind of investments in the passing game, you need, like, that means you're taking investments from other places, and you have to be able to lean on the passing game to win. Which means some weeks you might have to throw the ball 45 times and win, 50 times and win.
Yeah.
That's not how the Niners play.
No.
Ever.
Kyle doesn't do that.
No.
And so, it reverts to process. It's what Kyle is comfortable doing, which is following his father's blueprint.
Running the ball, being balanced, and passing the ball as little as possible. If they could run the ball 40 times in a game, they would. They averaged 30 passes a game last year. Why are you going to be throwing $27 million a year at a wide receiver or $55 million a year at a quarterback when that's the offense you want? I think a lot of fans assume, like, oh, well, in a couple of years with this quarterback and this wide receiver, it's going to be a totally different offense. They're going to be top 10 in passing. Really? Why? What about the Shanahans make you think they're ever going to evolve?
There's no evidence of that at all. There is one blueprint, and that stays the blueprint. Mm-hmm. And the question becomes is, can Kyle evolve, or can the organization make him evolve?
Yeah.
And Jed is not in a position or wants to make Kyle evolve. He's happy with the money that comes in. He doesn't want to touch Kyle as a result. Kyle has all the power in the organization. No one can tell him no. And so the only change comes from Kyle seeing the need to change and evolve. But Kyle doesn't evolve on offensive line, cap strategy, situational coaching, all the elements that fall into why they don't win titles.
Mike Shanahan was the Broncos' offensive coordinator from 85 to 87, and then their quarterback coach from 89 to 90, and then their offensive coordinator again in 91, and then their head coach from 95 to 2008. So he was with John Elway for quite a long time, and he never won a Super Bowl until he got Terrell Davis and ran the hell out of the ball. And the first time they won a Super Bowl, John Elway completed 12 passes. These are the Shanahans. They don't have a sophisticated drop back passing scheme. They're about running the ball with outside zone and play action passes off of that. Their offensive line is built for zone blocking in particular. That's just what they're always going to be. It's what they've always been. And I think if you know the Shanahans, and then you understand why maybe Kyle should be or is a little hesitant to hand out huge contracts to people that are just in the passing game. Look at Debo and Kittle. Those two got big extensions, but they're both highly involved in the running game. Kittle as a blocker. Deebo as a ball carrier. Ayuk isn't. Purdy isn't.
Ayuk is to a degree in that he sets those key blocks that can free McCaffrey.
He sure does down the field. It's true.
But those are highlight plays. They're not constant play calls. Mm-mm. And so Ayuk contributes. Ayuk certainly brings value as a blocker. No question.
He does. That's true. But like wide receiver blocking can only affect so much. It's not like tight end blocking at the point of attack.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near in terms of the usage rate as a blocker.
Right. Right.
It is not what you're doing with Ayuk, but you're still trying to leverage his ability to do that.
Yes.
And so it still contributes. And that's how Kyle could possibly justify it, is to say that, well, I need Ayuk in terms of his blocking skill set for his blocking in addition to everything else.
Right.
Kyle can sell himself on, I need Ayuk given what I do. But for Ayuk, you're not optimizing what he does. You're not using him down the field the way you should. It's not an optimal situation for Brandon at all. He's much better off going someplace else because he could be a dominant receiver elsewhere. But I still think that Kyle is going to, via process, say that, we want to keep Ayuk.
Yeah, if I were Ayuk's agent, I think I'd want him on another team because I would understand what the reality is with the Niners. They could pay him, but they're never going to really feature him the way a lot of other teams would, and that will affect his next contract and his overall career. And so it'd be one thing if the Niners won a Super Bowl, so they could say, like, you got to stay here. You could be part of something really special, a dynasty, but they didn't. And the question is why, and I wonder if certain players on this team are starting to look at the head coach as the reason why, because last year it seemed like the team was as good as it could possibly be. Is the team better on paper now than it was last year? I don't know about that.
Not yet. We have to see what plays out in the draft and then figure out where they are. But, relatively speaking, I just look at this team and say they had their chance and blew it. It's the death by 1,000 cuts in the latest Super Bowl. That you can take 20 plays and say this is why they lost. If you take 3 of those out, they can win. And that's how close the margin was. It's if Greenlaw doesn't get hurt, if Ray Ray doesn't try to pick up the ball, means
if McCaffrey doesn't fumble, if George doesn't say hi, George, if Kyle knew the rules,
if
they went for it on fourth down once or twice.
But how many of those ifs are then attributed to Kyle not being a good situational coach?
Most of them.
Yeah. As your dad has pointed out, Bill Walsh would tell his team, if there's a loose ball on a punt, fall on it. Do not try to pick it up.
Don't be a hero. Yeah. Be a team player.
And that's part of the difference, is that here's one that pays attention to the granular details in situational coaching, and here's one that blows it off. And that's why one wins and one loses.
That's a great point. I would agree. Let's talk about the Niners' Super Bowl window versus their future. At a certain point, they got to commit to the future because they've kept this team around for such a long time. It's almost like what the Warriors are doing. But with the Warriors, you understand it because they won championships and they won one 2 years ago. They almost feel like they have to. The Niners are keeping together a group that hasn't won a Super Bowl. So either it's the team's fault or it's the coach's fault, or they have one more chance to prove that it's just been all a fluke and they're going to win it now. I don't know. When is the future coming?
We'll find out. This draft is going to tell us a lot in terms of how they see the team currently. If they're going to use the early picks on people that start, that's saying that, okay, we are all in for this year.
Yeah.
If they are drafting players that are redshirts, then we're looking down the road. So I think the first 3 rounds are going to tell us a lot in terms of how they value the team, where they see themselves. For me, I look at it and say that Trent Williams is their window. As long as Trent is playing well, that's really their Super Bowl window. But once Trent retires, then what? And so I think that
now you have the worst offensive line in the NFL.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you've got a chance to do something about that in this draft, will you? And we'll find out. But the problem is that if you take a tackle to take a tackle, now you're redshirting, and now you're hurting your chances to win a Super Bowl this year. My guess is that this roster, Shanahan, Lynch, they want to go for it this year. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's going to be a focal point early, that people want to see tackle for tackle's sake, and they're not going to get it, that the Niners are going to go elsewhere.
Yeah, I think they look at their Super Bowl window as partially Trent Williams, just him, but also Brock Purdy's rookie deal. And this is the last year that he's going to be making whatever million plus his little bonus. That's huge. I mean, it gives them a competitive advantage over most teams, although other teams are sort of figuring out the formula. So I think this is it. And in a couple of years, if they do extend Ayuk and Purdy, they will be a totally different team in terms of how they're constructed and where they're investing. So in terms of how they're currently constructed, this is it.
Yeah. And the inertia would suggest that, okay, you got this close to winning the Super Bowl. You clean up your act. You have a chance to get back to the Super Bowl, given that the NFC is still relatively weak. And Detroit has improved. Green Bay has improved. Dallas may be receding. Philadelphia, you know, we'll see what Fangio can do with that defense. But it still comes down to it's the Niners ball game if they execute and if they're clean and if they stay healthy. And it's a lot of ifs. But if they do that, they can return. And I think that that's what their thinking is that we can make one more attempt at this.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they should be thinking that. They have a very good quarterback who's not making much money. And they have committed so much money to these veterans and kept them around. It's almost like they've come too far to go back now. But at a certain point, they're going to have to make tough business decisions on not just people like Armstead.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand. Look, they made the right call with Armstead. Armstead must have been shocked. I kind of get it. Like, wow, that's what you really think about me? $6 million a year? Well, yeah. You got a chronic injury. Sorry. So at what point are the Niners going to start making tough, like, you know, they almost burned a bridge with Eric Armstead. Were you willing to do that with George Kittle or not?
That's going to be the test, is that this was the first one where Shanahan took the Walsh approach of let them go a year early. And Armstead was shocked because the Niners have never done that. They've always been a player-friendly team.
Yep.
And so you're starting with me, the blueprint, the your candidate for man of the year, yep. All that I've done.
The longest tenured player, a guy who's 1 year away from being on your 10-year wall. It's almost like, are you not proud of me?
And so, you know, Armstead is saying, what about what I gave to you? Mm-hmm. And here's the Niners being realistic in terms of what his value actually is. Because part of the problem with Armstead is that it's not just that he misses games due to injury. It's that he doesn't play well due to injury in the games that he does play in.
That is true.
That, you know, there and
what's crazy about Armstead is that he magically plays really well in the playoffs.
Usually, but in these playoffs, he did not play well against Green Bay.
He didn't play well against Detroit either, right?
I mean, they had an average to poor game against Detroit, but he played really well in the Super Bowl.
He did.
So give him credit for that. But I think the Niners were looking at those first two playoff games and saying that we can't afford to get you for one of the three playoff games.
I mean, the way he finishes, it almost makes you wonder, you know, with this chronic injury, are you pacing yourself? Like, do you know that you can turn it up for certain games but not others? If that's the case, then the Niners made the right call.
Yeah, I think they did. I think that they should have done this last year, in that if you're going to have a long-term plan and say we need to move on, then you shouldn't have restructured him last year. You should have just left his contract be so that you could then let him go this year. You know, there needs to be a long-term plan as opposed to year to year to year. It needs to have more continuity. It needs to have more strategy.
And again, what kind of gets me about the Niners' plan is it hasn't changed in 5 years. They've had the same team. Yeah, they sort of stumbled upon a formula in 2019, and they don't want to deviate from it. And what I would say is, okay, well, it hasn't won a Super Bowl, so let's just take it to, like, let's think about this logically. Either the team as currently constructed isn't good enough, or the head coach isn't good enough, or you've just been victims of bad luck. The Niners want it to be door three. I think it's door two. I think you could argue that this team really has been good enough, that it is the best roster in the league, and that this coach, who gets so much credit, just can't get it done, just can't close the deal.
No. Well, and it's the details, like I was saying before, is that if you don't have the granular details in terms of situational coaching, that can always trip you up.
Yeah.
And you look at Kyle and you say, okay, last 10 minutes of the Rams conference championship, he doesn't play Debo, doesn't touch the ball. In Debo's all world year, what are you doing? And then NFC championship against Philly, Devontae Adams traps the ball. The Eagles are rushing up to the line to snap it. Obviously he trapped it, and Kyle freezes and does nothing.
Right.
You need somebody to come in. And the Rams have done this. Baltimore has done this. Hire an assistant game manager.
Call timeout.
So
call
that you can deal with these things.
Yeah.
And you can overcome the situational coaching barrier that's currently there. Kyle didn't know the new overtime rules. He couldn't have called up Sarkisian and said,
"Yep,
how do you? What's the strategy for overtime?" And then college and pros now the same. What do we do? He didn't do it. Why?
Your game management coach could have been in charge of that.
Right. Yeah, you could have had a lot of things where you take something off of Kyle's plate, or at least you give him a sounding board. But somebody that can say, here's what we need to do. Somebody to correct the mistakes. Because right now, those mistakes are happening every time.
And what's crazy about Kyle and his plate, I like the metaphor. It seems like he's in year 8. You would expect the head coach, who's also an offensive coordinator, to take more, put less and less on his plate over time and be better at delegating. But Kyle's the opposite. As time has gone by and he's lost assistant coaches, he's putting more and more and more on his plate. He's lost Mike McDaniel and Bobby Slowick and Clint Kubiak. And who is replacing them? Himself.
Kyle.
Himself.
Well, it's incredible. In Kyle's ideal world, he would clone himself and he would be the coaching staff.
And the quarterback. Yeah.
In addition to being the true GM of the team on top of the rest of it. It's just, and this is part of where it comes back to Jed, is that Jed has to know. You can't do this and win. Look at what's happened. You get a certain level of success. You can get to the Super Bowl, but you can't win it because you refuse to touch the franchise cash cow. Kyle Shanahan brings in the money. He fills up the stadium. He gives them 2 home playoff games. And so Jed isn't willing to touch that.
No.
But Jed's the only one who can. He's the only one who can step in and say, we're going to give you an assistant game manager because you need one. We're going to focus on the offensive line because that's where we need to head now that we've got Brock. You need somebody to make football decisions for Kyle, or at least force people into the room with Kyle who could steer this team over the barriers that are currently preventing a championship.
We'll talk about the lemonade stand and the marketing machine in a minute. But first, I forgot to do the thing. This is too bad. They told me that I need to do this and to not put it up 20 minutes into the stream. And I told them I would never do it again. And I did it again. So BetUS, I'm so sorry. I forgot. I meant not to do it. I will make it up to you. I promise. Don't you hate that? When you tell someone that you really mean you're going to do it, bro, and then you mess it up. Wow. I'm getting fired for sure.
You go away from what you're accustomed to and bang.
I'm getting fired. Okay. Let's give BetUS real good. I mean, they're sponsoring the show. So this is their website. And if you go on, I love the off-season stuff for the NFL. They call it NFL specials. And I mean, it's like they have answers for questions I ask. Like I even asked Robert Saleh at the owner's meeting. He's like, what's up with Zach Wilson, man? What's going on there? I'm not going to get into what he said. It was all positive. He's a very positive person. But that was private. BetUS, which team is Zach Wilson going to be on next? Ooh. The Chiefs? The Rams, the Vikings, the Niners, +800. Broncos, Saints, Lions. The Chiefs don't seem to make sense to me after signing Wentz.
Could be. Yeah, I'm surprised that the Edmonton Eskimos and the Toronto Argonauts aren't on that list.
That's what I'm saying. Why are we going to be in the NFL?
Yeah. I'm not so sure.
So just so people can see it for themselves. What is going on right now? What is that? Hold on. Get rid of that. Okay, there it is. It's my first time streaming. I'm new to this. So look, it really has the Niners at plus. You could bet on it. If you put $10 on the Niners getting Zach Wilson, you'd make 80. But there's no way the Niners are getting Zach Wilson. I don't know why they have the fourth. If the Niners have the fourth best odds, Zach Wilson's in trouble.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense. Yeah, the Niners have their quarterback room. They're done.
They're done. So what about not the Rams, not the Chiefs? The Vikings have Darnold and they're going to draft a guy.
Tampa.
What about Denver? They have nothing.
Well, Denver is going to try to do something in the draft. They want J.J. McCarthy.
That's exciting. You know, J.J. McCarthy and Zach Wilson look almost exactly the same. Okay. Yeah. The Saints, they have Derek Carr. He's terrible. Yep. They could use another terrible quarterback just to have two.
Good.
I like the Saints. They have terrible taste in quarterbacks.
Yep. Yep. They've proven they shank this before, so they can do it again.
Let's do it. Okay. $10 on the Saints to have Zach Wilson. Not the Niners for sure. The Saints. To win 90. Let's place the bet.
Okay.
Let's do one more special just because I like BetUS that much. They've been good to me. I got to be good to them. Other specials. Teams go 0-17. Brock Purdy to throw 5,000 yards. CJ Stroud. Check out CJ Stroud. 5,000 regular season passing yards for CJ Stroud plus 700. What do you think?
I think they could do that.
I think they could too.
Yeah, Stephon Diggs, all of that. And they'll probably add another receiver in the draft too. Yeah.
I would agree. Tank Dell, Nico Collins. All right. Well, if you want to wager with BetUS, check this out.
BetUS, America's favorite sportsbook and casino. Live betting and racebook. We're celebrating 30 years with a historic offer. A 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. Plus, 10% gambler's insurance. Get started today. BetUS, where the game begins.
That's right.
Okay.
All right. Well, you teased it before our BetUS segment, but there's a reason the 49ers are so happy with the level of success. If that's not even the right word, because it isn't success, but the level they've achieved in the NFL, they're very proud of it. And there's a reason why. Can you explain?
Well, Jed said, you know, to you in answering your questions in Orlando, that the Niners have reached a level where they don't even have the best quarterback in the NFL. And yet they can make the Super Bowl twice in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. That they have a system that they've developed where they can build an organization that can compete regardless of the talented QB. Mm-hmm. That's his argument. Mm-hmm. And you can see that to a degree. The Niners have done a good job in building a great roster. You know, they had the NFL's best roster going in. So they can take pride in that and say, we've done that well. And they have. But at the same time, your GM, head coach, and offensive coordinator has barriers in his mindset that prevent your success. And mm-hmm. so the organization, one that would be smart, like the lemonade stand, would say, okay, let's correct those.
Right. Let's do something different.
Walsh, McVay, you know, and the coaching staff that Walsh had would correct those mistakes. So, you know, as one example of just how detailed that lemonade stand was in their approach, yeah, you would have Joe Montana throwing interceptions in games, and Holmgren would sit down with Joe and they would go over the interceptions and say, was this your fault?
Yeah.
Or was this the receiver's fault? Or was this just the defense making a great play? If they determined it was Joe's fault, Holmgren would take the play out of the playbook, just remove it. And that's the kind of process that they're dealing with. That's the level of detail, and that's not being duplicated now. And you see that same pattern of detail versus not in Walsh's approach and strategy and game planning, in what Holmgren did as an example, what Seifert did. And you know, most telling is front office, that Walsh and McVay would make big moves. They would trade up after winning a Super Bowl and trade up and go get Jerry Rice. Unheard of, unbelievable, amazing. Mm-hmm. And franchise defining.
Yeah.
It's part of why they succeeded. And then the 80 draft, where they took three DBs or two DBs and a safety in their first four picks. You know, they solved the position group in one draft. Imagine if the Niners did that with the offensive line in this one. And none of
I just think it's amazing that the Niners came so close to winning Super Bowls, and instead of tweaking something and talking about it, like, this is what we learned, this is why we fell short, this is what we're going to do to get over the hump, they have basically just tried to spin the narrative. Like, that's what they're focused on. And they're telling media and fans, like, actually, we've accomplished a lot. We are the premier organization in the NFL. Now, the Chiefs have the number one quarterback, sure, but we're the number one organization in the NFL. And, you know, just judging that by Lombardi trophies is kind of passe. And if you really know ball, you'd understand that we are cutting edge. It's like, Stop gaslighting your fans. They understand what success is.
Well, and especially these fans that have five Lombardi trophies under the lemonade stand that knew
standards.
Exactly.
It's not the 90s anymore, okay? It's not the 80s. Like, no. Not lowering our standards.
Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's not just gaslighting, it's deflection. It's just dealing with your ego. Is that your ego demands that, well, it's just bad luck. That if we get enough tries at the Super Bowl, we'll eventually win it. Not necessarily. If the situational coaching is that bad, it's always going to get in the way. It's always going to prevent a ring. You have to deal with that head on.
What are you talking about, situational coaching? It was great. Kyle did a great job. He didn't abandon the run in the second half of the Super Bowl. He knew the rules. He did everything right. In overtime, it was Steve Wilkes' fault. What are you talking about? They addressed the problem.
Sure. Of course. It's all Steve's fault. It's not on me. I wouldn't have done anything different.
It was Tyler Croft's fault. It was Jimmy Garoppolo's fault. They're all gone. They're good now.
Yeah, come on. This fan base in particular knows, especially the older generation like me, that there was a standard set in terms of how you go about winning that went from the front office decisions down to the field and then the coaching. And that doesn't exist now. And Jeff wants to point to, well, Eddie didn't have the salary cap. He did in 94. They won. And when there was no salary cap, that was true of the entire league. That was the competitive context for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So don't tell me that it's just about writing checks when the front office made decisions that this one can't. When Walsh was a better coach than Kyle in every aspect. It's just you have to face why you're not winning Super Bowls.
Well, you have to admit I feel like they're gaslighting people. They're acting like they care. But we're talking about the marketing machine. I don't think they really care. Because, again, it doesn't take a genius to do like the math problem. Okay, best roster, best coach, no Super Bowl ring. Why? Are you going to tinker with the roster or are you going to get a new coach? And the Niners are like, neither.
Right. We're just going to make excuses instead.
We're just going to make excuses and sort of work around the edges and tell people that we've been screwed or we've had bad luck or, you know, in football it's kind of fluky because there isn't a 7 games. How many times have we heard Kyle Shanahan say that? Well, in other sports, it's a 7-game series, but in our sport, it's like, okay, give yourself every excuse. Oh, we keep playing these Hall of Fame quarterbacks in the Super Bowl. It's not fair. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, that's why you're number 2 then.
Who passed on the Super Bowl quarterback? And why isn't Jed pointing the finger back and saying, you know, we didn't even scout Mahomes?
I'm pretty sure every other general manager that passed on Mahomes has been fired. Pretty sure.
Yeah.
And head coach.
But Kyle is not, again, because he's the franchise cash cow.
Yes.
And that's what Jed values is I want financial success. The field success, if it happens, great. But if it doesn't, as long as we have the financial success, we keep the money coming in and we keep the value of the organization going up.
And what does Kyle bring to the organization? One, he's a name brand. People have heard of the Shanahans. I mean, not your average person on the street, but football people have heard of the Shanahans. And people who think they know ball think that Kyle Shanahan is really cutting edge. So it gives the 49ers some credibility that they didn't have when their coach was Chip Kelly or Jim Tomsula. Yeah. And I get that, but that's pretty much the extent of it at this point.
Well, and that's the value, is that it helps to fill seats and it helps your credibility as an organization on the football side to say, well, we've got Kyle Shanahan. He's one of the best offensive minds in the game. And he is. But what about Kyle Shanahan, the general manager? What about Kyle Shanahan, the situational coach? That's why you're losing.
Where was his offensive mind on 4th and 3rd and 4 at the 9-yard line? Like, he can be the best offensive mind in the coach for months. But in the fourth quarter of the biggest game of the season, he just does some really erratic stuff every time. Yeah. And it's so clear to me that he's just, to use his own term, not a closer.
No.
Not a closer. He's had so many opportunities to show that he's a closer. And if a player had failed this many times, Kyle Shanahan would be like, you know what? You're not a closer. We got to get someone else.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that they need to look at is when mistakes are repeated.
Yeah.
Then that's something you really need to pay attention to. So the first Super Bowl against Kansas City, what happens? Kyle doesn't run the ball late. The defense gets gassed, and Kansas City puts up 21.
Uh-huh.
Part of that was because Kansas City dominated the line. Playoff games are won by matchups. And the Niners have lost the matchup to Chris Jones in two Super Bowls. What has Kyle done in response? Nothing. And that's Nothing. The thing.
No. He made excuses.
Well, that too. Or he spoke to the value of continuity on the offensive line, that mm-hmm. through continuity, they're getting better. And we're going to have these guys that we'll draft and they'll compete. No, you need to get dominant offensive linemen to compete in playoff games to win that matchup. Mm-hmm. You are losing Super Bowls because you're being physically handled at the line. Chris Jones has beaten you easily twice. What have you done? Nothing.
One more thing that Kyle brings to the Niners is people love talking about Kyle Shanahan. He's controversial. He's complicated. There's a lot to talk about, and he keeps the 49ers in the national conversation, but it's largely about him. And to me, this is kind of what makes the Niners like the Cowboys, where they're fun to talk about. There's a lot of meat on the bone for discussion, but they don't win championships. So the Cowboys are like the object of ridicule around the country, and the Niners are looked at as this really excellent organization. To me, they're exactly the same.
Well, and Colin Cowherd made that point recently, as he says that the Niners will become the Cowboys, and they already have. And part of the national
once they give their quarterback a bajillion dollars and he's not Patrick Mahomes, then they'll be the Cowboys.
Well, once, I think they already are the Cowboys. Making
a bajillion dollars. It's over.
Well, yeah, but you still are losing the big games because of your organization not correcting mistakes. Same thing Dallas has done. That Dallas,
if they had
Jerry fired, wants to fill the stadium, boom, they do.
Agree. Sorry to cut you off. If they had fired Kyle a year ago and elevated D'Amico, or fired Kyle a few years ago and elevated Saleh, where would they be?
In a better place.
Yeah. These are the opportunities.
It's still a composite, though. It's that there's some gains, there's some losses. You know, give Shanahan credit for what he does do well. You know, play design, scripting. But at the same time, point to what he doesn't do well and doesn't learn from and doesn't change. Offensive line philosophy, the cap strategy, the situational coaching, none of that's changed. None of it will change. And if Jed won't touch him, it's not going to change, and they're not going to win.
Also, I feel like his play design is just kind of overrated. Like, yeah, scheme matters. But look at the Texans. They have Kyle scheme there. They're really good. Is Bobby Slowick really good? No. C.J. Stroud's really good. C.J. Yeah. Stroud is making Bobby Slowick like a genius. He's making D'Amico Ryan look like the best coach in the league. But when you have a quarterback like that, things fall into place. If you're a good coach, you won't get in the way. And Kyle always is tricks the media and the Niner fans into thinking that he's the most important element in the equation. He's not. It's always the quarterback. And you can see that in Houston. What's the difference between D'Amico Ryans and Robert Saleh? C.J. Stroud. Boom.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah.
Alone. But Kyle wants to be the marquee. The Niner marquee is Kyle Shanahan presents the San Francisco 49ers. And Jed is fine with that because that's what keeps seats.
Like Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Kyle Shanahan, the 49ers. Yes.
Right. And for the national media, it makes them look smart to say, here's where Kyle Shanahan is smart. Now I'm going to diagram the play and, oh, wow, look how he schemed this guy open. And so it's the national media making themselves look good by pointing to Kyle. But the national conversation needs to go to Kyle is why the Niners don't win championships. Good as he is, he's got these flaws he refuses to correct. And here we are.
I don't understand why the media hasn't figured that out. I feel like some people have, but it's like, everyone said all year, this is the best team in the league. This roster is incredible. They're a juggernaut. How many times do you hear that word? And that Kyle's the best coach in the league. And they don't win. And people are like, I don't get it.
And then there's no national conversation on that.
No, if it were the Cowboys, there would be. But the Niners aren't quite in that realm yet. I think they are on YouTube, but they're not necessarily on like old school network television, cable television, maybe soon. But again, I think, like, as we can see, YouTube is taking over. And I think as time goes on, a big part of the value of these teams is how much they get talked about on social media and all these platforms. And as long as Kyle is the coach here, the Niners are going to be talked about as much as any team, or more than any team in the league. It's them, Dallas, Pittsburgh, and Green Bay, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. But yeah.
The Niners are always a good topic. And the Bay Area, with all these sports teams, who dominates the conversation? The Niners do. This is a football region.
For example, so let's say I wanted to do a show today on the Giants, who are in season, or a show on the Niners, who aren't playing for months. The Niners are going to do way better. And that's not just because I have a Niner channel. It's like anyone that tried to do a Giants show right now wouldn't get the numbers we're getting. And that's just the way. I don't think people care that much about other sports. Even college football is falling off.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
It is.
They didn't think that through. They made it minor league sports. No one cares about minor league sports. The allure with college is that they're amateurs. Oh, these are the best amateurs in the world. Oh, now they're not amateurs anymore. Now they're just not the best professional athletes in the world.
Yeah, well,
yep.
I'm fully in favor of the kids getting paid. I thought that, too.
Absolutely.
College football was a plantation.
What's going to happen? The average football sports fan is going to be like, you know what? It's just not as interesting anymore.
Well, it's not as good. And people are going to be more aligned to the pro teams. It's where does college football succeed? Where the pro teams aren't.
I've never really liked college sports.
LSU.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not a big college guy either. And, you know, I watch college football a ton, but only for scouting. Not because I care about the outcome.
Exactly. I don't. Because college football was, like, to me, was always dishonest. It's like, it's amateur. It's like, no, it's not. They're getting paid under the table. What are you talking about? But fans of the sport bought in, like, oh, yeah, man, this is just pure for the love of the game. Like, no, it's not. And now that it's, like, all out on the table and people know what it really is, it's like, oh, that's not what I really liked. I'll just,
yeah. You pull the curtain back and you saw Oz and you said, not that great.
I guess it is.
That's what's happened, and that's what's going to happen to all college sports. You know, college hoops is just living off of the tournament, basically. And
yes,
college football, more and more, it's just about scouting.
And with baseball, they changed all the rules in a 5-year span. And I'm just sitting there and be like, I played this sport and I don't quite understand the rules anymore.
Well, yeah.
That's
fine. I haven't watched a baseball game in 40 years, and I'm not a fan.
I'm trying to get into the Giants this season. I've watched every game so far this season. And every game, there's like, that's a rule? What? Are you kidding? It's a good way to confuse all of them. It used to be America's pastime. Now people don't know the freaking rules. We're getting way off topic.
Well, football was America's pastime, and or has been for decades.
Decades. It's not even close. It's like the only sport the country really cares about. Even the NBA's fallen off.
Yeah.
God forbid when Steph Curry and LeBron James retire.
And it's not that far away.
It's not that far away. Okay. Let me see what I can do on the next topic. Here we go. Yeah. Boom. Please.
Okay.
Please. This isn't going to be good. I don't know if it's going to work. We might have to not use the visual here. Anyway.
Won't scroll. Okay.
Let me try. Okay. Scrolling up. There we are. Up. Nope. Why are you doing that? Okay.
Well,
I'm sorry. Okay, there we are.
Right. There we are. Okay. So there this is my mock draft as of now. It's always changing. This is what I expect in the first. There's a lot of talk that Minnesota wants Drake May. Denver wants J.J. McCarthy. New England needs picks, so I think they're going to trade out. Denver, the New York Giants, the Raiders, they're all looking to try to get a quarterback. But I think Denver is best positioned to move into Arizona's spot. And then they take McCarthy. Then the draft goes as it should. Harrison, Neighbors, Alt, Turner. That's almost a lock. Then Odunze, I think that Arizona is very good at trading back up. They need a receiver. Odunze is the third receiver, and then there's a big drop to Thomas. So I think that Arizona moves up to 9.
Can I say something I'm noticing real quick? Just as a non-draft guy who's a lot of offense on the board. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, ton of it.
It's a lot of offense.
And that's how this draft falls.
Yeah.
10th pick, the Jets. Their fans want an offensive lineman, and that would make the most sense. But if the Jets continue to act as a GM in serving what they think Aaron Rodgers needs and wants, they're going to take Brock Bowers.
Yep.
Then you go further down and you get into the linemen. And so the corners start going. I think the Raiders with Quinion Mitchell, the Colts with Terry and Arnold, Byron Murphy, or the UW tackle guard probably go to the Seahawks. The Rams are looking at an edge more than a tackle to replace Aaron Donald, but they could go either way. So I think Latu versus Byron Murphy, one of those three will be the Rams pick.
Mm-hmm.
For Amarius Mims, that's the guy that Coach and I love.
Latu's a good player.
And shout out to Coach. Yeah, Latu's a great player.
Latu's a good player.
High energy, big motor, and a lot of moves. He's just
can't remember UCLA having an edge rusher like that ever. That guy was good.
Yeah, it's really rare.
Yeah.
And then you look at this and say, all right, what else do we go with? I think that Philadelphia is going to try to move up for Mims. That's the kind of player that Howie Roseman likes.
Yep.
And Pittsburgh can move down.
Went to Georgia.
And another right Georgia up. Bulldog.
Yeah.
Miami, Graham Barton fits that offense really well. And so I think that he goes. Then Brian Thomas, the next receiver. Then you get to these green picks, and that's the five before the Niner pick.
Okay.
And any of those guys could fall to the Niners, but the way I have it, I don't think they do. M. Patel says Mims' huge bust potential. Yes, he's only played 8 games, but in those 8 games, he's dominated. And you look at Mims and say 6'8", 340, 5'07", 40, fluid, plays with very low leverage and power. I think that he's going to do really well. So anyway, you look at this in the Niners and they say, okay, who falls? And I think that they're hoping
Cooper DeJean. No,
they're hoping for Cooper DeJean, but here's the problem. DeJean is,
good
looking to, he's going to work out faster earlier than he thought. He was going to work out in the 15th. He moved it up to the 8th, and that shows the confidence that he has in what he can do to perform for the league. So I think that he's going to bump back up. He could go in the early 20s, he could go by the late 20s, but he's probably gone.
Okay.
But for the Niners, I think that that's somebody that they would definitely look at as a free safety that'd plug in and start right away.
Right.
Kool-Aid is another player that the Niners look at, but Detroit needs DBs. And so,
you're drinking the Kool-Aid too, huh? Sorry.
Yeah. And so who falls to 31 for the Niners? Jerjon Newton, the defensive tackle from Illinois. He's a possibility.
Should I pull up the other screen?
Yeah, and then pull up the other screen, and now we go.
Let me see if I can get that.
And here's the decision tree for the Niners in the first round.
Okay, share screen. Decision tree. Share. How's that look?
Okay, can you zoom in?
Let's zoom in. Yep. Where are we looking?
And so go up.
Okay.
First round. And so here are the players the Niners will be looking at 31. Xavier Worthy. JPJ, the center from Oregon, Zach Frazier, the West Virginia center, Jordan Morgan, Kingsley Suamataia, Jerjon Newton, Chop Robinson, if he falls, Darius Robinson, Edgerrin Cooper, the top linebacker, Peyton Wilson, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Nate Wiggins, who I think is going to fall because he's too light, Ennis Reikestra, who's the best run-defending corner, and then DeJean and Newman. So for this, I would say that they need to look at Newton, if he falls, and he may not.
Okay.
And Cooper is somebody that isn't talked up, but is someone that they could use, a linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
Or Kool-Aid. Wiggins, I don't think they would take just because he's too light. Wiggins is not the kind of corner the Niners need. They need a corner that can fill and run defense and blitz. That's not him.
Yeah, they're not going to be playing a lot of man-to-man coverage, so they need more like – that kind of stuff.
And so Reikestra, that's a very solid defending corner in terms of run D. I think that he's somebody they could look at. But ultimately, I think that they would look at JPJ or Newton. I would expect them to take Newton. But there's a number of people that they could look at.
A linebacker either at Cooper. They definitely need a linebacker, and they took Reuben Foster at that spot. So they would take. I think they would take another one.
They could.
They could.
The concern might be that Cooper is also who Baltimore needs because they lost linebackers that can blitz.
That's true. And they lost Patrick Queen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's JPJ? So
that's a possibility. Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon. He's the second-rated center. He's a great athlete. He would be a good fit in the system. He moves well. He's tough. He's physical. And then, you know, Frazier is in the same mold as a former wrestler, so he's very agile. He moves well. He's got a lot of power. But Frazier is expected to go mid-first. JPJ would be late first, early second. Worthy, you know, you can look at Xavier Worthy at wide receiver if you think that he can be a franchise player as a returner. That Worthy was a great returner at Texas. He had a punt return for a touchdown, and he's got the 4.21 speed. So he's a possibility, but I would think that JPJ, Newton, Kool-Aid, and Cooper. And Cooper DeJean if he falls, but I would think that Newton would be the guy that they would look at first.
Okay. Tell me about Morgan and Sumataya.
Jordan Morgan is the guy that Jesse wants to adopt. He loves him some Jordan Morgan. Morgan is very athletic, very smart, a great system fit. He's very good at locking into a guy and then stonewalling. The problem is that that's great for pass pro, but it's not great for the run game. And Morgan does the same thing in the run game. He'll go at an angle, and then he'll lock the guy and stonewall him. He doesn't drive him off the line. And so if you're Kyle, you are a run block first. Are you really going to take Jordan Morgan when he's pass pro first? Probably not.
Yeah.
But if Tyler Guyton drops, Guyton is a good run blocker, very physical, but lacks power, lacks technique, needs a lot of work. So he's a redshirt all the way.
Yeah.
Suamataia from BYU, he was a five-star recruit, went to Oregon, couldn't break through, and then transferred to BYU. He's got power. He's got all the physical tools, but he's never put it together. Technically, he gets beat. So in the practices at Mobile, he would get beat by power, bull rushes. He would get beat by speed if there's faster guys. So it's when he
faces not necessarily an upgrade over Colt McKivitz.
No.
Okay.
It's that if Kingsley puts the technique together, he can easily surpass. It's just he's got the five-star tools. He's always had them. But throughout his college career, he has not put it together technically. And so are you going to bet on him doing that as a pro? It's a risk. I don't take either one of them. There's a lot of Niner fans that love both of those guys. But to me, that's taking a tackle for the sake of taking a tackle. Don't do it.
Okay, so you think they're going to go interior defensive line in round one, which is like a freaking cool. That's a great bet. Not what I think they should do, but it's the 49ers. Second round, are you looking at offensive tackle there, Rosengarten?
Rosengarten, if he drops. You know, there are some people that have him now in the 40s. There are some people that have him in the 50s. I think that Miami could look at him, that Mike McDaniel could see the same value that Kyle would, that this is someone that fits the system really well, that's good in space, that moves well, that has technical ability, that's got some power. Rosengarten still needs some work to be done, but he would be a good investment as somebody that could potentially take over in season. And if not, then he would be ready to go next year. So I think that Rosengarten is somebody they definitely look at. Blake Corum, who Larry loves. My issue at running back is, if the Niners say that we want to hang on, and I know you've said they're going to move on from CMC, and they should, but would Kyle? Kyle's going to want to keep CMC, and therefore at running back.
Also, Jed traded for him. You heard that, right? Jed pulled the trigger. So he might want to keep him too.
And so with Corum, the issue there is he's 23.
Right.
And there's a lot of running backs that are 23, 24. Most of the running backs the Niners are talking to are 20 and 21. I think that's because they're factoring in that CMC is still going to be the back. And if they take a back now, he needs to be young so that when they do finally let go of CMC, the back's ready to step in, and he's still relatively young and he has a career ahead of him. So for me, I take out the 23 and 24-year-old running backs. That includes Corum.
Larry compared Corum to Emmitt Smith.
Yeah, no. Okay. I get it. Yeah, Corum has some great qualities, but he's not Emmitt. Wide receiver Polk and McMillan, those are the Washington receivers. Polk has a lot of ability. It's just that when you're playing with Roma Dunze, you don't really get much of a spotlight.
Nope.
And McMillan was their slot receiver that got hurt. He's got a lot of talent, but his hands are an issue. And then tight end. And here's where the Brock Wright stuff comes in. Jatavion Sanders from Texas, Theo Johnson from Penn State. Both of those guys, you look at it and say, well, they could go at 63. Sanders is dropping. Johnson is rising. And Kyle might say, I need a tight end too.
Yeah.
And he takes one of those guys. It's a possibility.
Van Granitz, when they needed a running back and they drafted Trey Sermon, it didn't work out right away. They doubled back the exact next year and took Tyvus Price, and that didn't work out. So, I mean, Cam Latu, early returns aren't so good. I could absolutely see them taking a tight end here.
Yeah, because the pattern is throwing picks at a problem.
Yes.
And here they are. And so Jatavion Sanders plays at Texas, and who is Kyle closest to in terms of a college program? Steve Sarkisian in Texas. And yep. So, like they had the inside word on Brandon Ayuk when they found out from Herm Edwards that Ayuk was really good and Lynch had a relationship with Herm.
Right.
Kyle has the relationship with Sarkisian. How is that going to factor into this draft? There are Texas players all over. There's Worthy and Mitchell at wide receiver. There's Sanders at tight end. Johnson at tackle. There's a lot of Texas players where that connection may play into the pick. So Sanders is a possibility in that light, given that the Niners had success of getting the inside word from the college coach and a player that fit.
All right, what about round three?
Round three, the thing that pops out at me is that initially they thought that Malachi Corley would go in the third. And so you look at all these guys that are capitalized, that's players they have for 30 visits. And therefore, it looks like they're targeting taking a receiver in the third because they're lining up multiple guys to evaluate at that position. If they then bring in Malik Washington for a 30 visit, that makes it even more evident that they're going to take a receiver in the third. The argument that can be made elsewhere is that you've got a lot of talent here, especially at DB. Should you go defensive back in the third if you haven't picked one earlier? And that's the argument that Jesse makes, is that you get guys that are good in zone and press that'll be available in the third. I like Cam Hart from Notre Dame. There's a lot of players there that they could take, but their visits indicate they're locked in or at least strongly leaning toward taking a receiver in the third.
Wow.
And so Corley is now expected to go in the 40s to 50s. Javon Baker from Central Florida is expected to go around that pick in the 60s. So I would think that Baker would be the guy that they would be looking at most. And then Jerry Rice's son at SC.
They got to take Jerry Rice's son. Have to. Just because.
Don't.
Why?
Kyle is focused on separation. Rice doesn't separate before, you know, at the line or after the catch.
I've never seen Jerry Rice's son play at all.
Oh, ever. Well.
But
he's
is it possible? Like, where is his role going to be? Is he just going to be a bust?
I don't think he's going to be a bust. I think that he'll play. It's just
it'll be his role.
He's not going to be his dad in any way.
No. But in round three, could you get a slot receiver?
Yeah. Yeah. There's.
Did I lose you? Am I still here? Hey, where'd Tom go? Am I still here? Sorry about that. How you doing? I'm Grant Cohn. I cover the 49ers. You may not know me. I just started a YouTube channel, and I'm doing a show with Tom, who's gone. What happened was someone called me on Skype, and I tried to click decline, but I clicked the green button because I got confused. And then I think my computer got confused. And so now Tom's gone. But I'm here. So what are you going to talk about? Seen any good movies recently? What are you guys up to this day? Is this on? Am I here? You think Tom's coming back? I don't think Tom's coming back. T- Tom probably thought he messed up something, but he didn't. It was all my fault. I'm having a good day. Set off the fire alarm in my house 5 o'clock by accident. That was fun. I've been up since then. So maybe that's why I did that. Oh, Tom's just texting me. Let's see what he says. He's rebooting. He really thinks it was his. You're good. Okay. He thinks it was his fault, but it wasn't. It was my fault. Yeah. So, guys, see any good movies recently? Anything good? Anything good? Nothing? I don't know. Morpheus Tom left the chat. Should I give him a minute to come back? I'll give him a minute. I think it's over. I think he did a good job. He took us through all the rounds, and then I messed it up at the very end. The Orphan on Hulu. Dune is good. Has anyone seen Late Night with the Devil yet or Immaculate? Anyone seen that? How about that? I don't think Tom's coming back. He is going to come back, but is it going to be in time? X-Men 97? I'll check it out. Dazed and Confused? That's classic. Choked at the... Oh, M. Patel said I pulled a Kyle. Choked at the end. That's true. I'll take that. I feel like I should let Tom come back before we say goodbye. But it's just going to come back and be like the show's over. So if you want to leave, you can. But I'm just sitting here. I'm not really watching any shows these days. Got to get back into television. Roadhouse was okay? All right. I'm going to end the show. Sorry to Tom that I did that. It was all my fault. I'll be back in 4 hours with Marco, 4 o'clock. Stay tuned.